south, and us, or you. It's probably better than king of the south and us. As ISIS as a specter looms over the horizon of world affairs like a monster gobbling up towns and villages, it's natural to be afraid and worried about the future. Although there are a lot of people who don't watch any news at all, I see them interviewed on television asking, who's vice president? What? Is there a vice president? They're so clueless, they have no idea what's going on. But for people who are watching the world news, they're thinking, this thing looks gruesome. And so we see prophecy being fulfilled. And I remember years ago, GTA saying, there will be an Arab caliphate. And the way they, fight each other, people, that's never going to happen. But obviously you see, at least it's a caliphate that has Middle Eastern countries frightened. I'll put it that way. And of course, GTA said it would be a fulfillment of the King of the South. And I want to just say something that might be a little different in this respect. I don't think we should overly be worried or concerned. We should take all these world events in stride, even with a little bit of humor. When I say a little bit of humor, I kind of laugh when I heard certain politicians say, this thing is neither Islamic nor a state. I said, what? I heard a young man just this morning on the news media, I think it was on CNN, and he had all the black garb and they usually wear, and he was saying, we, meaning ISIS or ISIL, we are the voice of Islam. And all over the world, a lot of Islamic people, men and women, are flooding in there. This guy likes the violence. By the thing about ISIL that's different, if you remember in the 1940s when the Nazis had all these trenches full of people that they shot, well, if they saw a German soldier take a picture of, they'd take the camera away, and they tried to keep all that stuff secret. And they, when the Red Cross said, well, do you really have death camps? And like Auschwitz, oh, no, it's just a lie. And we can go into details how they deceived the Red Cross. The Nazis were, well, at least they didn't want the world to know about their violence. ISIL is different. They're bragging about it. They're putting it on the internet, on television. They're slicing people's heads off with rusty knives. Gruesome. And they're proud of it. And what's worse is a lot of Islamists are attracted by the violence, by the fear. They like to frighten people. Because I thought, why would you do these atrocities? I heard them discussing, whichever network it was, this lady said, this nice 6-year-old girl, this cute, well-dressed, and her head cut off. And putting babies, I won't go into all the gruesome stuff because I want to upset you. But I'm telling you, gruesome violence, and they're bragging about it. Like, you're thinking, man, I've never seen evil like this before. That's the difference. And say it's not a state. Well, they've gobbled up most of Syria. The map's changed, but a good chunk of Iraq, they claim they're closing in like a claw on Baghdad, which is the big prize, and I don't know. I'm not sure how all this will go. But for two reasons, I think we should watch world affairs, but not watch it with a worried, woe is me perspective. We should watch it with our spiritual heart, from a spiritual realm, knowing that the sooner these prophecies are fulfilled, the sooner we will cross over to Jordan and be in God's family, the real promised land. And in a way, look at it, I know you're going to say, but the world's going to have trouble before Christ comes. But look at it in a positive way, because the story has to, from what we understand, God will allow Satan to put two big empires and maybe something in the Far East to fight it out before Christ comes back to save the world. Since we know that's going to happen, we can kind of take it in stride, knowing that it's going to happen. It means we're closer to the end. Don't worry. God will take care of us. There are many scriptures that talk about God taking care of us. I want to just focus on one, 1 Peter 5. But there are others. But God said, you know, don't hang down and be overly worried about it. God is in control. I mean, you think about those scriptures where an angel locks up the devil. God can lock the devil up anytime he wants to. God is in control. Let's go to 1 Peter 5. And remember, God is in control. God will take care of us. We need to look at things that we're in God's hands. God will take care of us. Just like that song, God will take care of us. 1 Peter 5, verse 4. When the chief shepherd shall appear, we shall receive a crown of glory. I like that word, glory, that fades not away. We're going to be kings forever, for all eternity, probably near the top of God's family. Wow. And he just happened to pick little old us. We're not in any way special. And we should be happy about that. Verse 7. Casting all your cares upon him. And why should we cast our cares upon God? For he cares for you. Think about it. Put all your worries on God. Put your worries on the shoulders of Jesus Christ and say, my big brother, my elder brother, Jesus Christ, is going to take care of things. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to stew about it. I'm just going to watch it like watching something that will inspire me to get closer to God. But I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to fret about it. I'm not going to be afraid. The devil wants us to be afraid. ISIS wants us to be afraid. But we put our cares on Jesus Christ, and we're going to be happy. We're not going to be afraid. And God will keep us safe. I believe most of us will be in various places of safety. And we should just think about it. And if you happen to pass away in Christ before the end time events fulfill, you're a lucky person. The twinkling of an eye, that last trumpet, just like that, you'll be in God's family. Verse 8, be sober, be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. Now you see from the little crown over here and the words over there, the theme of the feast this year is let no man take your crown. Now here's how lion prides operate. The male lion, who's big and has I used to live near the zoo, and they have a big barrel-type voice. You ever hear a lion roar? The bellow inside the lion's body reverberates. I mean, it really is. It's noisy, scary. I mean, I couldn't imitate it, but it's really a scary sound. He goes over to a certain place and he roars, and then the herd that they're tracking, he chases the noise, chases them in a certain direction. It's really a trap. Where the lionesses, who are smaller, but they actually do most of the real kills, they're crouching in the grass, kind of off to the side, so as the animals stampede by, they pounce out and they grab somebody and eat them, you know, for the dinner. Well, I call that nature's trap. The lion roars and traps people. Well, how does the devil trap people? Well, of course, he has many traps, many devices, but he can't get to us because of Jesus Christ. Just like Balaam couldn't have the pagan guy by paying him, put a curse on Israel. So the devil says, I can't get to them, but I will try to get them to come to me. Just like Balaam tried to lure people into worshiping idols. And he got about 23,000 Israelite men to do so. And you probably know the story. Well, how would the devil do that in today's world? Well, he might want you to start fighting with other brethren. You ever seen a guy in a playground who knows how to start trouble? Like people used to, they like that. I want to see you and him fight. Let's see you and him fight, or two girls. Let's see you all fight. Some people like to see girls fight. It's terrible. Anyway, I want to see you two fight. He said this about you. He said that about you. You know, the devil likes to do that kind of accusing thing, and he gets people to do his dirty work for him. Now, they probably pray for him. They don't know they're being influenced by the devil, so I'm not saying they do it intentionally, but that's what he does. Don't let anybody get you fighting with the brethren, or you get one little word and you make a big doctrinal issue out of it. Like one person mentioned to me just in local church, well, what about this Passover thing? Now, we keep the same Passover dates and all this other stuff. It's all the same. But it's a question of, are the Jews correct or not? I said, well, look, obviously we got all these articles and I think we're right. But I said, but what the Jews think and don't think is really irrelevant to our salvation. You're not going to leave the church over the fact that we don't say the same, that we believe the Jews are right and you think the Jews are wrong. It's irrelevant. They'll pick one word and they'll make a doctrinal mountain out of it. And we fight back and forth. The devil says, yes, I love it. Go get each other. You understand what I mean, don't you? So we've got a few empty seats up here if the kids are looking for some empty seats in the front row. There's always empty seats in the front row, by the way. So don't let the devil get you distracted on various issues and led astray, and then you go off with somebody. And then they become bitter when it doesn't work out, because you can't build a church on negatives, and they become bitter. And I've been through this so many cycles of it that it would be tiresome to go through it all. That's one of the devil's main strategies, and he has other strategies. So just be cautious. Don't let the devil push us into any kind of trap. And as we see this evil monster rise, another evil monster rises, anti-Semitism. If you want to measure evil, like in a mine, they put a canary in a mine to monitor poison gases. When hatred of the Jews, hatred of Christians, when anti-Semitism rises high, you know evil's being pumped up. The devil is pumping up evil in the world. I was watching TV, and I also saw on the internet, there are mobs in Germany, and Germany is the reason and the mobs are asking to put Jews in ovens. They said, no, this is not 1938 Kristallnacht. This was today, 2014. You think the Germans would be ashamed of mobs to say that? And they had similar mobs in places like France and even England. Like, Hitler was right. And I'm thinking, are they crazy? I mean, this is anti-Semitism in Europe today is rising really high. And it's not just the Gaza war. I mean, that was a big part of it. But it's been rising even before that. It's going up, up, up. And it is one of the problems. And you know the devil is turning up the evil dial. You can just sense it when you see more pressure on Christians who believe in the Bible and more pressure on Jews. Historical information that I think might be helpful as we study, because we can watch, the world is going to be frightened and confused. They won't know what to make of what's going on. But we know Bible prophecy, so we can watch it knowing that Daniel knew what was going to happen, even if he didn't fully understand what it meant. And I believe the Bible was mostly meant for the end time age. When all the events are there, the Bible's there, we can see it more clearly. Daniel 11, verse 40. By the way, just a backdrop. The Greek Empire had dissolved into two power centers. The king of the north, mostly what we call Asia Minor in Europe. The king of the south, what we would call the Middle East and North Africa. The king of the south was headquartered in Egypt. So we're going to consider that. By the way, Egypt probably has, well, Egypt and Turkey, but I'll talk about them in a minute, probably have the biggest armies and the best armies in the Middle East. So they're going to be, especially Egypt, major players that haven't yet been heard from. And I wonder if some kind of political deal may yet come about. But we will see. I'm not certain the details, but we're going to watch them. Daniel 11, verse 40. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push and come against the king of the north. Now, I want to go through some historical facts about Islam pushing at Europe. If you thought of Europe like this, this is Europe, Spain over here, Eastern Europe over here. Islam, for centuries, has been like pushing from both ends at Europe, trying to envelop it. And as you probably know, when Muhammad changed his tactics, went to Medina, he became a leader of an army, and it was, you convert to Islam or die. I mean, it was the gentle stuff didn't work. He realized that. And it worked. He conquered the whole Arabian Peninsula. And then not too many decades later, a big chunk of the world was under Islam. Well, they keep spreading, you know, into Spain and into Eastern Europe. So I want to go into just a few key dates. You realize how often Islam has pushed at Europe, and they will do it again. 732 A.D., a Muslim army was moving in on Paris, and they were defeated by Charles Martel, who's known historically as the Hammer. That's a great name for a general, the Hammer. And it drove Islam back, because they say if he hadn't defeated them, they might have conquered much of Western Europe. And the world as we know it wouldn't have existed. You know, Christendom would have been forced to become Islamic, because you either convert or die. 1571, a Muslim army was defeated by the Italians and Austrians, army and navy, at the Mediterranean Battle of Lepanto. 1683, a large Turkish Muslim army was attacking Eastern Europe and was closing in on Vienna. Vienna is what they call it in Illinois, but it's really Vienna. But you know, Vienna is pretty close to Central Europe, so you can see how far up in Europe they were. And this was one of the big battles where German and Polish armies won a spectacular victory to drive Islam back, you know, down toward Turkey. Had these battles not been won, we might be speaking Arabic, and, well, a lot of Western progress probably would not have occurred. And just here's something about Hitler that you may not know. Hitler mired Islamic power. Figures he'd mire somebody, you know, follow me or die. You know, that would fit him. He made a deal with the Mufti of Jerusalem, because he was a guest in Berlin. And the Mufti raised some Bosnian Muslim SS divisions. SS were the most ruthless. They had a skull on their army cap. Like, can you imagine wearing an army uniform with a skull, like a Halloween death skull on your cap? I can't even imagine that as a uniform. And they were the most ruthless Nazi soldiers, and some of them ran the death camps. Give you some, and they didn't feel there's anything wrong with killing people, just like you kill chickens. And anyway, they raised Muslim SS divisions, the 13th and 21st Waffen SS divisions, who killed Jews, Russians, Gypsies, and any other people that the Aryans considered subhumans. And by the way, they do the Muslims do say that Jews, and I think some of them imply others, are subhuman, just like Hitler did. They call them pigs. I won't elaborate, but you get the general idea. This is pretty ruthless stuff. And let's talk about things that have happened in our lifetime. 1968, Bobby Kennedy was shot by a Muslim because he thought he was getting too friendly with Israel. 1972, Munich, they massacred some Israeli athletes. 1972 and 73, they hijacked planes and killed a bunch of people. 1979, the U.S. Embassy in Iran was taken over by Muslims, and you probably know that story. It probably cost Jimmy Carter his presidency. 1980s, a number of Americans were kidnapped in Lebanon. 1983, the Marine barracks was blown up by Muslims. 1985, the cruise ship Achilles Laurel was hijacked. 70 Americans and Jews were murdered. 1985, TW Flight 847 was hijacked. Pan Am, 1988, 103 people died. Muslim males did that. 1993, World Trade Center first attack. 1998, U.S. Embassy in Kenya. And then, of course, there's 9/11, 2,000 people killed. Actually, I have a couple other more attacks, Daniel Pearl and others. But you get the general idea, don't you? The Muslims keep pushing. They don't give up. I mean, they might lose a war, a battle, but they don't give up. They believe that Islam, Muhammad, you know, through the cave and went in the cave, and he says was an angel. You can decide whether yourself was an angel. Gave him the Quran, and they're supposed to dominate the world with their version of Islam. and others will be forced to convert. There are a few exceptions, but where you can pay a special tax, but even that is only for a time after they picked on you and forced you to convert or else. So they've been a real power for centuries. Let's read verse 40 and 41, because a little more to the story. I want to finish verse 40. The king of the south shall push at him, the king of the north. He shall come against him as a whirlwind. I like to think of the German Blitzkrieg, which means lightning warfare. Whirlwind and lightning warfare sounds the same. It's war all mechanized, you know, everything on wheels, supported by close air support, you know, which could be helicopters as well as, you know, dive bombers, with chariots, horsemen, many ships. They shall enter into the countries and shall overflow. In other words, just really hit that part of the world and flow over. He shall enter into the glorious land. That's Jerusalem. We'll get back to that in a minute. Many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand. Edom, which we believe is Turkey, and Moab, the chief of the children of Ammon. And Ammon is the capital of Jordan. So we think Turkey and Jordan may not be in the caliphate. It's interesting that Turkey, after losing the Ottoman Empire in World War I, they have maintained maybe a shaky, but they, when really push comes to shove, they seem to maintain neutrality. They didn't help us in the Iraq War. At the last minute, they backed out, which, you know, made our cause worse. Even right to this very minute, right at this very minute, a city on a Kurdish border, and I wrote the name down. Anyway, I'll find it in a minute, but where did I write it? Whatever the name of the town is, I might have put it on a different page. Kobani, I think it is. And if I've got the details right, I'll check it later. It's right on the Turkish border. It's right now being besieged by ISIS. They've got artillery, you know, set up, and they're being bombed. And America has helped with 8 airstrikes, taking out, I guess, 5 trucks and tanks. And you realize nobody really knows what's going to happen. So if anything I tell you, it could change tomorrow. But I was listening to, I believe this case, it was CNN and Fox News, mostly Fox News. And what they were saying is that there's pressure on the president to beef up the airstrikes. Because surprisingly enough, with these airstrikes, you know, 6, 7, 8 a day, taking out so many trucks, ISIS is still on the move. They're still gobbling up villages. They're still encroaching on the vast metroplex of Baghdad and Kobani. And they're saying that the president needs to get tougher with, and Turkey's saying, you need to put in some ground troops, but we're not going to do it. And there's Turkish tanks sitting on the border, keeping Kurdish people from coming across to help with the fight, because the Turks don't want to get involved. And there are actually riots in Turkish cities because they don't want their people coming across the border to help their fellow Kurds who are now... Well, here's what the media says. We'll see. Hundreds of thousands have escaped, but there are thousands in there trying to save the city. And if ISIS wins, they will probably slaughter them all, because that's been... You know, there's no mercy. It's like you either go along with what we say or... I mean, men, women, and children. I mean, this is gruesome. These are evil people. And, of course, they're pressing the president to beef up the airstrikes. I don't know what's going to happen. You'll probably hear it in the next week or two. But anyway, I'll talk more about that toward the end of the message. The question is, what will America do? What will Turkey do? And I want to tell you a corny story that might kind of make a point. It's a short, corny story. It's called Rabies. My neighbor was bitten by a stray dog who turned out to be rabbit. I went to see how he was and found him on the floor frantically scratching on a piece of paper. And I told him rabies could be treated. There's some, you know, vaccines they can give him. He did not have to work out his last-minute will. He said, "Will, what will? I'm making a list of people I want to bite." Well, that's pretty much what ISIS is doing. And you know what? I believe a lot of the Middle East leaders are frightened. They may have a good-sized army, but they're saying, yeah, but a lot of our population might agree with these guys. And I bet you places like Saudi Arabia, I bet the king there is scared spitless. If his army mutinies and or a reasonable number and join ISIS, I'm sure his head's going to be on a stake. Now, that's just an opinion. We'll see how it works out. Or they might make a deal in the future. And that's something to watch for, too. But remember, Jerusalem is the center of the prophecy. One of the key triggers of prophecy is an empire, an Islamic empire in the south of Jerusalem. As we see that bill, know the prophecy being fulfilled. And another king of the north will be coming soon. I suspect the euro is going to have the big collapse everybody expected. And out of that economic crisis will come eventually the king of the north. By the way, if you watch the stock market, it's had tremendous gyrations, up, all out to up and down, more than ever. And I looked at that and I said, that's an indication of instability. The financial world doesn't know who to trust. They don't know if the Fed knows what they're doing. They're not sure if the president knows what he's doing. By the way, officially, they announced this morning, America's not the number one economy in the world. They said that was likely to happen. China, at least in some measures, is now the biggest economy in the world. America's had that position for probably about a century and a half, maybe a little longer. It's kind of amazing. We've lost our top credit rating. We're no longer the biggest economy in the world. America's losing much of its wealth, all of which the church expected too. You know, we have to come down for the king of the north and the king of the south to be the main players in the world. So these are all fulfillments of prophecy. I just don't know how long it's going to take. Let's go to, let's see. I want to talk about trust for a minute. And I'm going to come back to Jerusalem and the king of the north and these big events. I'm coming back to that, but I want to talk about trust. I think one of the keys for us to stay happy, contented, and close to God during these troubling times, as the king of the south and the king of the north take position, both will be evil empires. Both will be evil empires. The king of the north will be another version of Hitler, but more successful, because Hitler was not that bright in some ways. He made a lot of key mistakes. This guy may have more charisma, and so will the false prophet that's going to do the religious side of it. They're going to be more effective than Hitler was. You know, I mean, he was effective enough, of course, but a lot more so. Evil empires are coming, but we need to trust God. And that's what I want to focus on for a few minutes, trusting God. Let's go to Deuteronomy 9, and I want to look at the example of Israel. Israel didn't trust God. They kept saying things like, every time there's any kind of problem, oh, God, you put us in the desert to starve us, kill our children, you hate us. You think, what? That's in the Old Testament. You read all the stuff the Israelites said. And there are many, 10 different rebellions against God and Moses. And it's amazing how little trust they had in God. So let's go to Deuteronomy 9, verse 5 and 6. And we need to be the opposite. We need to have that trust in God. Deuteronomy 9, verse 5. Not for thy righteousness' sake, or uprightness of your heart, do you go in to possess the land, but for the wickedness of the nations the Lord your God has driven them out before you, that he may perform the word which the Lord sware unto your fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So then he goes on to say, verse 6, understand, therefore, that the Lord your God gives you not this good land to possess for your righteousness' sake, for your stubborn people. And we haven't been chosen because we're better than other people. May it be a little bit the opposite. I mean, there are a lot of people with a lot more on the ball, and we all know that. So stay humble. It's good to remember that. But let's go to verse 23. Likewise, when the Lord sent you from Kadesh Barnea, saying, go up to possess the land. So when they got to the edge of the promised land, they refused to go up through the mountain pass and enter the promised land. Because the Israelites said, oh, those people are too tough. And there's some giants. And they have walled cities up to the sky. And we're too weak. We can't take it. Now remember, but Moses said, you know, from the platform to all the people, but you've got Jehovah, or Jehovah, you know, however you pronounce it. Jehovah is the English-sized version of it. You've got the God Jehovah with you. And remember, these Israelites had seen all the miracles of Egypt, including maybe the number two empire of its day, the Egyptian army, destroyed in the Black Sea when Moses closed his hands and the water smashed the Egyptian army. And they saw the plagues of Egypt. They had manna from heaven, a whole bunch of miracles that happened. They actually heard God's voice from Mount Sinai. And yet, somehow their heart was anti the true God. They did not trust God. They refused to go in and do the work of God that they had in those days. And we have to be the opposite. We have to trust God. Don't be frightened by the things that are coming, by the two wicked kings. Stay calm. Remember, our salvation is near. God is with us. We can trust God. They didn't trust God. I say, trust in Christ. The devil says, you shouldn't have too much confidence in God and the Bible. Just go with the rest of the world. Have some fun. Kind of get back in with the rest of society. Israelite, they actually wanted to go back to Egypt, back to the world of slavery. We don't want to go back to the slavery to sin. We want to move forward. Israel never trusted God. Now, their children, the generation later, Moses did bring into the promised land. But the original generation, they never trusted God. Even after all they saw, they wouldn't go forward. We must go forward. Do God's work. Let's go to 1 Corinthians, where Paul uses the example of the story we just told you as a warning to us New Testament Christians. And these were Gentile Greeks and other Gentiles and some Jews. So it applied to everybody, regardless of whether you're an Israelite or not. 1 Corinthians 10. Notice what Paul says to New Testament Christians. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 1. Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, did all eat the same spiritual meat. They all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. You know, most people don't realize it. Who was in that cloud that led the Israelites through the desert and led them into the Red Sea? It was Jesus Christ. Who was the God that met with Moses on top of Mount Sinai and wrote with his own finger the Ten Commandments? It was Jesus Christ, or he became Jesus Christ, in later centuries. There is no conflict between the Old Testament and New Testament when you understand it and apply it properly. And that may require a little bit of understanding, but there's no conflict between the two. Because Christ wrote and inspired both the New Testament and the Old Testament. Verse 5. But with many of them, God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. In other words, during that 40 years, they all died of one thing or another. Now, these things were an example to the extent that we should not lust after evil things as they lusted. Do not desire to go back to the world. I want to be popular, and I want to go to Halloween parties, and all the exciting things that we think the world has. Resist the carnality. And we need to love and trust God. Believe that God knows what's best for our lives. He knows what's best for us. We can trust him. Verse 10. Neither murmur, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed in the of the destroyer. There were certain angels God sent. Many Israelites were struck down on a number of occasions. Thousands would surround Moses' tent or the tabernacle where Moses was, and they would say, stone him, stone him. And different people wanted to take over the leadership from Moses and Aaron, and God struck a bunch of them down. And one case, the earth opened up and just swallowed 250 men who were challenging. They were leading Levites. They were top priests, but they were challenging Moses for authority. And they said such things as, I'll lead you and take you back to Egypt. But we had the flesh pots. You're thinking, are they crazy? But for some reason, that's the attitude they had. Well, what were they doing? And often thousands were plotting in their tents, even the ones that didn't come out and protest. They were always murmuring. You read Deuteronomy and Numbers, and they were whining and complaining and worrying and whining and murmuring and complaining and murmuring and complaining. That's human nature in the raw. Don't complain. Don't murmur. Don't fear. Oh, how come this? How come that? Why isn't God taking care of us? Why hasn't God given us more of this? Now, we can't answer all the questions of what if. But put it this way. Whatever trial God allows you to have, whether by accident or on purpose, God knows that it will benefit you if you go through it with faith, positive attitude, and trusting God. Take every trial as an opportunity to be more godly, to be more Christ-like. Not with the Israelites. I'm complaining. I'm murmuring. How come this is happening? And I realize there are mysteries that we can't answer. And some people do have much tougher trials than others. And I will admit that. But you don't want to be the negative complainers and murmuring like the Israelites. Verse 11. Now all these things happen to them for examples. They're written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world has come. And I believe it's even more so than in Paul's day, even more so for us. It's written for us upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore, let him that thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. In other words, be cautious that you don't get caught up in the murmuring negativism that the Israelites showed. Believe in God. Believe in Christ. Trust him. And be cautious of that anti-God attitude that's deep down inside human nature. And I can't explain why it's there, but it's there. Deep down, human nature has an anti-the true God drive. We have to resist it. Let's go to Hebrews 2:1, where Christ talks about us getting not neglecting the opportunity that God is giving us. Hebrews 2, verse 1. Therefore, we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we've heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. S-L-I-P. Slip. You can slip away from God without even, you don't just come out and say, God, I'm leaving. I'm doing my own thing. But it slips away from you, just like something that slips out of your grasp because you're not focused on getting closer to God. So be determined to get to the promised land. Be determined to go forward into God's family. Don't let it slip. Listen carefully to the things that you hear at the feast and other things you're going to hear. And work to get closer to God. Have humble, repentant prayers to God. God, you know, I'm not that good a person, but help me to do better. That's the prayer that God wants to hear. And the devil, of course, wants to seduce us. Just relax. Do nothing. You know, if you take a boat in a lake or a river and you don't anchor it or tie it down, it will drift. It will drift. It will drift. I think we're that way. If we don't work at through humble, sweet prayers and coming to church and staying close to God, we can drift away from God without even realizing it. And as you see these two evil empires rise, remember, don't get concerned. Just know our salvation draws near. And the Israelites, you know, they really should have stuck with God. They didn't. They should have stuck with God. You read Deuteronomy, you'll see that they really should have focused on being with God and sticking with God. And they just didn't do it. They didn't move forward. Well, their children did at the end. The devil wants to lull us into sleep, just kind of drift back to society. Hebrews 2:2. For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast, every transgression and disobedience receives just recompense of reward. How shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? I want to emphasize the word neglect so great a salvation. Now think about it for a minute. Someone tells you, I can make you a member of the Vanderbilt family. You'll be forever young, and you'll get to be rich and rule over some physical empire. You say, oh, what a great opportunity. Well, God's much greater than that. You'll not only be forever young, you'll be like Superman, but no kryptonite. I mean, think about it. You know, in 1 Corinthians 15, it says, you know, death is gone. You'll never have to fear death. You know, nothing will hurt you. You'll be in God's family. We'll be able to, well, you'll meet God in the clouds, so it means we can fly. I assume you can fly, and you'll be a spirit being. You'll be a, I like the term baby God. You'll be a junior member of Christ's family. He'll be our older brother. And remember we said crowns, you know, Paul said glory and crowns. You're going to rule. You're probably thinking, he'll probably give me Chicago, South, never mind. The rule over. But no, you may get a great place like Jamaica or a great place like the Ozark Mountains, which would probably be a great place to rule over. But all joking aside, think what a great opportunity that will be. When Christ comes back, he's going to lead a cadre. You're going to be in Christ's team to take over the world. And you know the world is in bad shape. It is in bad shape. We're blessed in America, even in spite of the way things have been declining. We're still blessed in this country. I heard one guy say, if America were to totally open its borders and anybody could fly in here, half the world would come here if they could. The world is in bad shape, and we don't even realize how bad shape it is. People are putting 14-year-old boys in the hands of drug smugglers to get to America because the poverty that they live under. I'm not saying they're right to do it. I'm telling you, we're blessed. But even beyond that, we have a greater opportunity to be the first group in the God's family, the top of the pyramid, if you like to look at it that way. What a great opportunity. And Paul says, do not neglect so great an opportunity. How would you neglect it? You just don't do anything. You just kind of take it for granted. And one day when Christ comes, you're not close enough, you've drifted too far away, or you've let somebody deceive you off into some little petty group fighting over some word that they think they understand, that they don't understand. People think they know the Bible, they don't really know the Bible, and I won't get into that. But he's such a good friend of mine. If he goes, I got to go with him. Oh, okay, but you may be risking more than you think. I'll finish reading verse 3, which at first began to be spoken of by the Lord and was confirmed unto us by them that heard him. Now I want to read you one more corny story. I know it's a corny story, but I like it anyway. It's called How to Call the Police When You're a Senior Citizen. George Fills, an elderly man from Wall Lake, Michigan, was going to bed one night when his wife woke him up and said, hey, look, there's lights on in our garden shed. And he could see the garden shed lights were on his window. George opened the back door to go turn off the light, but saw that there were people in the shed stealing his stuff. So he ran back in the house, and he called the police. And the lady on the 911 said, is someone in your house? No, but the people are breaking into our garden shed and stealing all our lawn tractors and equipment, etc. Then the police department said, all patrols are busy right now. You should lock your doors. An officer will come along in an hour or two. Just lock your doors. He said, you sure? Yes, just lock your door. Okay. He hung up the phone. He counted 30 seconds. You know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 30 seconds. He called me back. Hello, I just called you a few seconds ago because there are people stealing things from my shed. Well, you don't have to worry about them now because I took out my pump shotgun rifle, and I killed them both. Dogs are eating their body right now. Within 5 minutes, there were all kind of police cars and SWAT teams swarming all over his place, including a helicopter and a fire truck. A paramedic ambulance all showed up. One police said to George, I thought you said you shot them. George said, and I thought you said nobody was available. Well, I don't know why I told that corny story. I really can't make it fit in, but sometimes you gotta have desperate means to get attention. Let's read verse 5. Hebrews 2. I know I should get a purpose for that one, but I like that joke anyway. By the way, if you do shoot criminals, get a lawyer, because it's a mess out there. Much of the mechanism seems to be supporting thugs and criminals, but anyway. For unto the angels has he not put in subjection the world to come, wherever we speak. You know, Paul said that in 1 Corinthians 6, we shall judge angels. Now, in the previous chapter, he talked about how glorious, you know, powerful angels are, and yet man, just for a short time, is below them. And you notice, when you read the whole context, it says not yet. And you read the whole thing. That means, verse 8 and 9 says not yet. That we're going to be above angels. And we're going to be in charge of everything. Because that's really what verse 8 and 9 says. Everything. You know how big this universe is? Nobody knows. It seems to be chaotic. They say Earth is a unique planet, like a beautiful blue marble, beautifully planned. Most of the universe seems chaotic. And of course, we don't see the spiritual world, whatever that is. But we're going to, as part of the family, of course, under Christ and the apostles and a bunch of others. But as part of the family, we're going to rule this whole universe. And that includes the spiritual world and the spiritual angels. Do not neglect so great an opportunity. It's there. It's for us. The second reason I think we shouldn't get all upset about the growth of the King of the South, ISIS, is I think it's going to take time for ISIS to succeed. This is just the first wave. They may be beat back, especially if our country really decides to put in the B-52 bombers and really blast them, which we haven't done yet. But I don't know and what other countries will do. Right now, they're not doing enough, but they're under pressure to do more. But here's what I think. The Islamic world has wanted a caliphate, an Arab caliphate, not a Turkish and not a Iranian caliphate, which is Persian. I think they wanted an Arab caliphate, and ISIS gives them that. I'm not sure. You know, there are many players. They all want the power, and they're going to have to battle it out. You know, as I said, Egypt has a big army. So we don't really know. But here's a scenario that could happen. A lot of the young men, some American and British and French, going over there to fight for ISIS, I can see them being double-crossed. I'm going to use the Hitler example. Hitler used the SA. For years, they fought for the Nazi Party on the streets in Germany and, you know, fought with the communists and other parties. And eventually Hitler won. He made a deal with Hindenburg. He got to power. And then the head of the SA says, well, you know, now that you're in power, what position am I going to get? Ernst Röhm said. Hitler says, that's a guy that could be a rival for power. Well, you've probably heard of the Long Night of Long Knives. He made a deal with the army, the German army. He would get rid of all the SA generals. He killed about 100 of them. They call it the Night of Long Knives. Disbanded the SA, and the army made a personal allegiance to Hitler personally, which was a terrible mistake, by the way. I can see Baghdadi, the guy that's the caliphate, making a deal with some other Arab powers, and a lot of these young men who are doing all this fighting for him, he may double-cross them for power. There's a lot of dealing is going to happen, a lot of fights among the groups. It'll probably take at least several years, may go back and forth, up and down. They might seem to be out like the Nazi Party when they lost their push in Bavaria. Everybody thought they were gone, but they had a comeback when the economy collapsed. In other words, what I'm saying is this caliphate is coming. And if I were the devil, I'd pick this group because they're evil enough. The devil wants a real evil group to do this. So I believe they are probably, or some combination there, will probably get it. But it's going to take several years. Nothing's going to happen overnight, at least several years. And the empire in Europe is going to take at least 2 or 3 years. I don't know when the economic collapse is coming. The stock market is looking more insecure. I saw the thing bouncing up and down. You can sense, but the can is getting kicked down the road. And it may even be a spiritual decision. By that I mean, it's when God tells the devil, okay, you can do your worst. Or, you know, God will put limits on things he can't do to us, but to the world. And maybe God hasn't reached that point yet because the church isn't ready. The church is still an end time factor. I'm not saying I have any idea all the details. I'm just saying watch all those things and watch them building a temple in Jerusalem. I believe it will come. And don't get worried about it. It's going to take time. I say at least 2 or 3 more years, maybe longer. But we should use this time to get closer to God. As we see them gobble up territory, maybe Kobani the next week or two, just use that to encourage us to get closer to Christ.